Hello and welcome back to another episode of the I'm Learning Mandarin podcast. Today's podcast episode is all about Carolina Navarro, a language educator from Spain whose Chinese learning adventures saw her overcome numerous cultural barriers on the way to reaching professional proficiency in the language. And speaking of learning adventures, if you're a Chinese learner based in Europe, listen up. This year, Mandarin Retreat are planning an awesome, fully immersive 5-day summer camp in the UK, packed with fun Chinese learning activities, and we want your input. In order to plan the best event we possibly can, we're currently running a survey giving you the chance to register your interest and have your say on preferred dates, locations, and activities. Our last camp took place in Wales in August and saw learners flying in from 3 different European countries to participate. Everyone had an awesome time learning Tai Chi, making Chinese dumplings, watching Mandarin movies, and exploring the stunning countryside together, all under the guidance of professional tutors in a totally immersive Mandarin language environment. If you're interested in participating, click the link in the description and complete the survey. Now back to today's guest, Carolina. Carolina first went to China in 2010, where she worked and studied for the next few years, becoming fluent in Mandarin. After returning to Spain, she put her Chinese skills to use working for the Confucius Institute for 9 years. Her current focus is on aiding learners in discovering their motivation for language acquisition. She conducts talks on language learning and assists families in comprehending and supporting their children's needs in learning Chinese. Okay, so Carolina, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Misha. Thank you for inviting me.
Perfect. So I wanted to start by talking about the beginnings of your language journey. So why did you first get involved with learning Chinese? Where did that decision come from for you?
Well, you know, my background is English, so I never thought about learning Chinese. I just ended my master's degree in education, and my husband, he moved to China with an internship in a Spanish technology company. So he was so happy in China, in Shanghai. He was meeting so many people. He was learning Chinese. And he said, well, why don't you come to China? And I was like, what am I going to do in China? I have no interest in Chinese. I want to be teaching English and I don't know what can I do in China. He said, just come and try. I went to China and I remember the first sentence he told me was, open your mind. And I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. I've lived abroad, I can do that, don't worry. Well, in the following weeks, I understood. My experience, I would say for the first year and a half, was not that good. I didn't adapt. I had a very strong cultural shock. I was working teaching English in language schools for the first months I lived there, and the approach for teaching English in China at the time, that was 2010, and Spain was totally different. Like, I had been learning about how to teach English with the latest approaches and the student in the center. And then I remember one of the first classes, one of the Chinese teachers making fun of one of my students because of her pronunciation. Wow. I was, wow. So it was difficult for me. I wasn't enjoying China. I didn't learn Chinese at the beginning. So I couldn't understand how they thought. I couldn't understand them. So after a year and a half in China, one day I was in Xi'an with a colleague of mine, and we had one of these misunderstandings because we couldn't understand what the taxi driver said. We thought he was trying to cheat us, but with the time I understood he was trying to explain and we couldn't understand. So I decided it was high time to learn Chinese.
Up until that point, you said that you hadn't really learned very much Chinese. When you first decided to move to China, did you go with this kind of idea that a lot of people have, that you would kind of just pick it up by being there? Because I hear a lot of people, and I used to kind of think that as well, that if you're just surrounded by the language in the country, you can just pick it up. And was that kind of the idea that you went in with?
No, I think my approach was totally different to people that are learning Chinese or want to go there with. My idea was going back to Spain. So I really didn't have any interest in learning. I just learned like the typical words to take a taxi and, you know, to buy some food, but very, very basic. Indeed, I remember once telling the taxi driver to take me to my address and ending up in a different part of the city because I didn't pronounce well the address.
Once you made that decision then to learn Chinese, what was the next step then? What did you decide to do? How did you decide to learn it?
Well, I left my job and I decided to learn at university because I thought there are language courses at university. I think they're quite good in general because you have to stay there for maybe 4 hours, 5 hours a day learning Chinese. In that moment, I thought that's what I needed. For me, that was my full-time job at the time, learning Chinese. But of course, it was not easy at the beginning either. I also had a cultural shock learning Chinese at university.
And what was that like then? So what kind of things were a shock to the system when learning at university?
You know, the first day I arrived, like, very really motivated. Okay, I'm going to learn Chinese from the very beginning. My colleagues, they were from Asia. They were Korean and Japanese. I thought, oh, that's good. I can practice. But then there were other things like writing. For them, writing was so easy. Whereas for me, I had to learn from zero. So I remember the first day the teacher would say, okay, tomorrow we have a 听写, dictation. You have to learn these words we've learned today. And I went, okay, I spent the whole afternoon learning those words. Like, okay, the pinyin, how to pronounce, the meaning, perfect, all the words. The next day I arrived to class and I start writing. I write all the words. The teacher comes and say, wait, you didn't write the characters. And I was, sure, you didn't teach us how to write the characters. No, but you have to write them. There is an order of the strokes. I don't know anything about characters. Well, you have to learn. And I was, what? I thought, okay, Carolina, don't worry. You've enrolled also in the writing class. I'm sure the teacher will be so nice. He will teach you how to write. So I go to the writing class and the teacher tells us, okay, write down your name, your Chinese name. And again, I was like, sorry, teacher, I don't know how to write my name. You write your name. It's okay. You write your name. So I tried writing my name, copying it from somewhere I had in my phone. And he came and he made fun of me. He started laughing. I remember that little girl from the language school. But I got really angry. And then I remember the next thing, he was writing a poem in the whiteboard and telling us to copy it. Great. I think I'm not going to learn how to write at university. So I got back home. Talk about it with my husband and he say, don't worry, I have some basic notions on characters and I can help you with the order of the strokes and I can show you a great website that can help you. I say, okay. So he introduced me to MDBG, the dictionary, and I just found my inspiration for learning to write characters. And that's how I learned. I didn't learn to write characters at university because they were not going to teach me.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of kind of stories like that of people struggling to adapt and having culture shocks when studying in China, but you managed to eventually adapt to it. So how did you go about that? How did you manage to adapt to that new learning environment that was so different from what you were used to?
Well, I just understood they were more traditional. I thought, okay, they don't understand that I'm not able to watch a character and just learn it by heart. They don't understand my needs as a learner. And my colleagues, they don't have those needs because most of them were Japanese. Right. And their characters were perfect. I just started understanding the culture and I adapted to it. So the next day, on the third day, you know, the second day in the afternoon, I spent all the afternoon with the MDBG dictionary, checking the order of the characters, decomposing the character to understand which parts the character had, and copying. For me, copying at the beginning was really important, like repeating the characters and trying to write very simple sentences that I could use. And that helped me a lot.
Yeah, that was something that was I found really interesting talking to you off air about this, was that like when I speak to a lot of people who've gone through formal courses at university, one of the criticisms that I often hear is that the courses force them to write the Chinese by hand and they spend a lot of time on that kind of handwriting skill and less so on other kind of skills like maybe speaking and things like that. But what I got from you was that the handwriting, you actually found that aspect, you really enjoyed it and you found it really helpful, right?
For me, at least, it's always been like that. I'm not good at memorizing. So I needed a way to understand the characters. For me, understanding a character, it's really, really important. When you already know a lot of characters, you know, there are many elements that repeat in the character, and they are easy to memorize or just to understand in a context. Even though if there is a word you don't know, But maybe you see the part that it's a mouth or the three drops of water, and then you can understand or imagine. You need to understand how they work. And for me, memorizing from watching a character was not an option because I was not able to do it.
And so that was kind of the first year, right, like of your Chinese learning. And how did things progress then from that point?
I learned Chinese really, really quickly from that point. I started learning Chinese from scratch in March 2012. And by May 2013, I got HSK5. I mean, it was not just writing, my speaking, my listening skills. They were all very, very good. For me, it was like my job. I took that year like, I'm just going to focus on learning. And I really, really enjoyed. And there was like a change in my mind on how I understood Chinese people, how I understood the culture, and I connected with them. Something that hadn't happened the first year and a half I spent in China.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed like going to the market, talking to people, like going to the park and talking to the old ladies and asking them about their traditions. I loved it so much.
You mentioned that HSK5, that you passed that within 1 year, and that's a really big achievement. But at the same time, as you know, like the vocabulary which is often in those vocab lists for HSK is not the same as what you would need in when like having a social life in China. So I guess the fact that parallel to your classroom work and homework and that kind of thing and preparing for tests, you were also going out and meeting people, I guess that was super important as well.
Yeah, that's it. I love talking to people. Like I love taking a taxi and talking to the taxi driver. I love going to bar, to do the groceries, talking to the teachers about like after class, talking to my classmates. I remember from the very beginning, I remember the first day of class or the second day, I met for lunch with two Korean classmates. They were in their 50s, I was in my 20s, and we met for lunch. They couldn't speak English. Of course, I couldn't speak Korean. And we had like a very basic Chinese. But we started talking from the very beginning. And they explained me how they could. Their tradition. I remember that we were talking about when a woman is pregnant, how many months is pregnant. Because in the West, we always say 9 months. But they say 10 months. And so we were talking about that. I still cannot understand how. But we could have a conversation. Even if it was like the first day.
Yeah, and that's kind of the ideal situation is to find yourself in circumstances like that where you really have to use Chinese because the other person doesn't understand your native language or English. You mentioned there sort of you established this social life. One of the issues that all learners of Chinese face, particularly those of us coming from non-tonal background, is obviously tones. How did you find that and how did you go about learning that and what issues did you encounter at first?
Well, at first and at last, because I still have issues, of course, with my tones, even though I have HSK6. That doesn't mean that you don't have issues, or at least I do have. I remember at the beginning I was in Tianjin and I took a taxi and the taxi driver was asking like, why are you in China? Why did you come to Tianjin? I was, I came here to study Chinese. But then I got this question like, so why do you come to China to study Chinese? And I couldn't understand. And I repeated in my mind, 为什么你来中国学习韩语? Wait. No. And I was, no, I don't 学习韩语. I 学习汉语. Ah, 我明白。 So that was the first time I said, my tones. You know, I usually speak with a very friendly tone. So it's difficult for me to pronounce the fourth tone when I'm talking in a nice way. I usually call it the angry tone. So when I taught my students, I was like, you have to try to be angry to pronounce it. So that was like my first encounter with the angry tone that I didn't pronounce properly. And I said, okay, that won't happen to me again. I'm going to think about it when I have to pronounce 韩语 or 汉语. So maybe 1 year later or 2 years later, I moved to another city in China and I went to register at the police station because that was one of the procedures. And a police woman that was talking to me, she was asking like, oh, so what are you doing here in China? She was very nice. And I was, 我学习韩语. I say, okay, no problem. 1 year later, I go back because I had to renew some papers. And she asked me, so how's your Korean doing? My Korean? Yes, you told me you study Korean. No, 不好意思,我不学习汉语。So from that moment on, I decided I would stop saying 汉语 and I would start using 中文 because that happened to me many times. I remember another time I was at a restaurant and I wanted a straw. In Chinese, straw is 吸管, but somehow I didn't pronounce it properly. I was telling my friends, well, you know, the waiter, how long does it take to bring a straw? And finally, I see the waiter coming with a plate full of watermelon. 西瓜. I'm sure by then I already had HSK5.
Absolutely, those are two really great examples, and everybody who's reached a decent level of Chinese has like loads of examples like that. But I think it's interesting because it's one of perhaps the flaws in the HSK system that tones don't matter. Tones matter a lot in terms of like communicating in Chinese, but they don't matter at all in terms of getting a good grade in HSK. So I think a lot of courses tend to neglect them, and teachers often are very lenient. People can have like a very high level. You can have HSK 6, but still encounter these issues of not being understood, which can be immensely frustrating.
I totally agree. And I remember when I was taking HSK 5, a classmate, she was Japanese and she was going to take HS 5 as well, but she couldn't even speak. It doesn't make sense. There is a exam where you don't have to show your speaking skills. And I remember she was very good at writing. She wrote perfectly. She understood, but she couldn't speak.
So I wanted to move on to talking about what you then did after that, because I think what a lot of people listening might be interested in is that you didn't kind of just stop at after that year when you like progressed so quickly. You carried on and eventually reached like a level where you were proficient in terms of being able to work in the language, which is something that I know a lot of people aspire to. So I wonder if you can tell us a bit more about that journey.
After I stopped learning Chinese, I got HSK5 and I stopped learning Chinese at university. First, I found a job in an international school in China. And I saw the difference between working with, because most of the students were from China or Taiwan, and I saw the difference from working with them, teaching them without knowing their language and teaching them already knew in their language. And also with my Chinese colleagues, everything was so different. I understood them. I felt closer to them than to other European colleagues by then. So that was really nice because it was, you know, my first cultural shock disappeared. The experience was completely different. I could help them with their doubts. I had improved so much my teaching skills. Out of 10 teachers, just 2 of us could speak Chinese. They came to me and when they had some doubts, they felt I understood them. And then after that school year, I had an opportunity to come back to Spain to work at the Confucius Institute. I came back to Spain. I worked in different ways with the coordination of the language courses, but also with the magazine, with the Confucius Institute magazine, with the bilingual version of Chinese Spanish. One of the roles I had was checking the meaning in the Chinese text and the Spanish text was the same. Checking the translation was fine, checking like the cultural differences or sentence by sentence. And that was nice because that helped me to keep my Chinese. Even though I was not studying like at the beginning, like with a book, that made me use Chinese and read Chinese every day.
I think you said you worked there for 9 years, right? So even though you were back in Spain, I think what tends to happen to a lot of people who've had like an experience like that, where they've lived in China for a few years or even just had a year abroad there, then they come back and it's very difficult to maintain the language. But you were fortunate that you were working in that environment, so that wasn't an issue for you.
Yeah, that's it. But it's so easy to start, I would say, losing a language, because especially Chinese. For example, if you speak Spanish or English or French, you can find more opportunities to use it in Europe. But Chinese, it's difficult to find opportunities. And even for me, that I was using it every day, like with students, with teachers, I worked with many Chinese teachers every day. You don't use the vocabulary you learn for HSK 5 or HSK 6.
Right.
You don't use it. even though you speak every day or you read every day or you write every day in Chinese, it's very difficult to keep that level for a long time.
I guess in Spain now, as in the rest of Europe, there are increasing numbers of international students, opportunities to meet Chinese people. Did you have those opportunities once back in Spain? Or
well, in Spain we have many bars or cafes, so there are many that are run by Chinese. So at the beginning I used to go there and try to speak, but after some months it's always like the same, like the first conversation, like, ah, 你好, 你会说中文, 你的中文很好, and you speak a little bit and then it's like, okay, again. So I stopped talking Chinese in that kind of situation. I use more Chinese with my colleagues, that some of them are my friends now. So I talk to them in Chinese, like out of the office context. And sometimes with my neighbors, I am lucky. I have two neighbors, two families from China, and they are really nice. So sometimes I do speak Chinese and I try to help them. They don't speak Spanish or English at all. So sometimes they need some help and I'm always willing to help them because I understand how it feels being abroad and not being able to speak the language.
It's been great talking to you about all these experiences. And I'm just wondering, to finish with, is there anywhere that people can find you? We connected on LinkedIn, so maybe that would be the best place for people if they want to learn more about your journey and follow your kind of advice.
Yeah, I would say LinkedIn is now the best place to find me. And I'm always willing to give my advice, trying to share some motivational posts about learning languages.
Perfect. Well, I'll put a link to that in the description so people can follow that. But once again, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you very much, Misha. That's a pleasure.
Hey there, thanks for listening to this episode of the I'm Learning Mandarin podcast. If you're currently looking to improve your Mandarin speaking skills, you might like to check out my Peak Mandarin newsletter. Run by me and my friend Will Hart, we share exactly what you need to do to become fluent in Chinese based on our experience. Subscribe to the newsletter and we'll also send you a free copy of my ebook, Lessons from a Chinese Learning Phenomenon, which tells the story of exactly how Will Hart learned to speak near native level Chinese within a 1.5 year period, how I put his techniques into practice to become fluent myself, and how you can too. To subscribe to the newsletter, you can go to peakmandarin.com or click the link in the description. That's all for now. Until next episode, goodbye.